Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. I'll tell you, the panel is ready to go. They're feisty. They're ready to go. They've already traded barbs with one another.
They were profane, too.
Yes, they were profane. I was going.
Was me. I was the profane one.
Not the only one.
But I'm good. I'm glad you're all ready to go. So here we go. Let me introduce WAMC's Alan Chartok is here. I should have seen that you were eating a cookie, and I will.
Well,
what is that?
Now that you mentioned it, it's a biscotti that was left over from the fun drive.
Good.
However, I have to say, Colleen O'Connell, our wonderful,
fun drive director.
Yeah, that's the word. She came in here and she saw me eating this biscotti, and she said, "Are you still a vegetarian this week, Alan?" Well, that's funny.
It is. We giggled. So good morning, Alan. And Rosemary Armeo is with us. She is the director of the journalism program at the University at Albany. Good morning.
Good morning.
Very nice to have you with us. Rich Honan is here. He is a corporate attorney and our usual Wednesday panelist, and we're thrilled to have him with us. Thank you very much.
Thanks for having me.
For being here.
I know it's always week to week.
Not week to week. Now, that's not true, because we have asked you, we would have you here every day if you would come. But we know how much money you would lose.
True.
You got some nice love during the fun drive. People saying that they were very happy that you're on and contribute.
That's nice.
And yeah, so I thought that was great.
And you guys did a great job during the fun drive.
Well, thank you.
You guys also meaning the everybody who contributed.
Oh man,
of course.
It was pretty incredible. So
when do we get our shirts?
The fulfillment usually takes. Listen to me.
Oh my gosh.
Fulfillment usually.
That was very sales chain of you.
Within like 4 to 5 weeks.
I see.
Okay, but you know what? For you, Rosemary, I'm sure it'll be sooner.
Where are those shirts made?
Very careful.
I'm just asking. I have no inside information.
Thank you for asking this on the air, by the way, but. We were very insistent that those premiums be made in America.
Unlike Donald Trump, our president.
We had this discussion.
Right.
We had this discussion. Yeah, don't check that. That was after the new policy.
Before the new policy.
Yeah.
This hat was made by Apollo in China, I have to say.
Yeah. So we had gotten obvious. Anyway, okay. Whatever.
All right.
Thanks for bringing that up.
We love him.
Let's start off with what's happening in the news. Do we want to talk about Elizabeth Warren first? Elizabeth Warren was silenced by Republican senators in the Jeff Sessions debate, his nomination for attorney general. Why was she silenced? Well, she was reading a letter from Coretta Scott King on the Senate floor. The letter from Coretta Scott King, the late Coretta Scott King, was directly about Jeff Sessions and her deep concerns, and she was reading that letter on the Senate floor, and she was warned, and then she continued, and then she was ultimately silenced by Mitch McConnell, who formally silenced her. And what this gets into ultimately, by the way, the letter was from 1986. What this gets into ultimately is it violates what, Rule 19?
Rule 19,
which is thou shalt.
Roman 19, which I think that's how old it is.
Thou shall not disparage a fellow member of the Senate.
God forbid.
Yes. So. Even though that has been done in the past to demean a sitting senator, even if it happens to play a part in what we're talking about in the role of an attorney general, and even if the letter happens to be from a civil rights icon, that apparently doesn't matter.
Nicely said.
Okay.
Well, it
no editorializing there, by the way, Rich.
Yeah. I think that it's not surprising that McConnell wants to cut off the debate, especially using procedural rules to stop and to get Sessions in and to get this administration underway. Don't see anything wrong with that. Kind of admire that he's using the rules. I like when people know what the rules of the game are and use them to win their way. What strikes me as so bold and callous about this is that it came right in the middle of a Coretta Scott King letter about Sessions' zest for voter suppression, a duty directly related to being an attorney general. So it was both a message, like, Democrats, you're not going to win, cut it out. And it also was this play that the base would love it. The racist base would love this. Cut out Coretta Scott King? Cool.
Also, basically, the way I took it, and I'm curious as to how you think about this, but also not only silencing a senator talking about a fellow senator, but both in the words she was reading and she herself silencing two women.
Oh yes. Yeah, I think that was a plus.
Can I just read a letter we just got from Carolyn, who makes that point? Arcane regulation, selective implementation. How about blatant exercise of white male privilege? Mitch Karma is an ugly thing. And the party in your office is coming.
I'm a big feminist, and I see that. However, if Charles Schumer, if Bernie Sanders, if Al Franken had been up there reading the same letter, I believe he would have done the same
but
thing.
But it wasn't. They
it's
weren't.
It's Warren's standout status as fighting these nominations that got her the diss. If you remember, Cory Booker was dissing Jeff Sessions just as badly in initial hearings. Am I wrong about that?
You are not.
He was the first senator in a long time to criticize another senator. He was not.
Well, he actually testified during the hearing, right?
Correct. And he was not stopped. No, yeah, the rule only applies to Sessions. I understand that. But there were no, there was no retaliation against him. This was at the, they want Sessions in. Sessions would be in already, except that they needed him to vote for Betsy DeVos yesterday. Or she would have lost. So they kept him in the Senate for his vote, and then now they want to ram it through. So it isn't surprising that he used this. But I am shocked by the fact that they would wait in the middle of it. Why Coretta Scott King? She read other letters from other people. There's lots of ways to disparage Jeff Sessions. He's done a lot of despicable things. Mm-hmm. But why did it have to be Coretta Scott King's letter?
And also, we should note, there was also words from Ted Kennedy as
Correct.
Well, former Senator Ted Kennedy, the late Ted Kennedy, who had also grave concerns about Jeff Sessions, and she was reading from that as well also. And I think that was what...
Correct.
I think that's what brought the warning, right?
That's
and
what started and it.
That's
right.
What started, yes.
Right. And so yeah. she clearly knows of the rule. I mean, the Senate rules, I think we all know, are pretty arcane, but they're observed, and I think they think it's
Are they observed, though? It seems like we're throwing out every single solitary rule of decorum in every branch of government right now. So
you say that, but they the whole thing is cloaked in a kind of, one of the partners in the D.C. office calls it the kabuki, the whole
the
kabuki ceremony.
Mm-hmm.
For example, they don't address each other directly, right? You can only address
the chair,
rules, yeah.
They're big on that. All the filibuster rules, in terms of you have to stand up, you have to keep talking, you can't yield except for a question. They
so even though a Democrat has to be present for it to move to committee to the full body of Senate, and you overrun, you change that rule, like, that's all okay.
Yeah, because
there are rules about changing the
because
rules.
That's the rules about, exactly. Yeah. So I think that they internally pay attention to this, and clearly Warren was aware of this. And if it wasn't on the Coretta Scott King letter, it would have been on the Ted Kennedy letter. It would have been on the whatever letter she was going to pull
but
out.
But it was on the Coretta Scott
yeah.
King letter.
And listen, I'm not. I think McConnell could have been as well advised to just say, listen, for the record, you're in violation of the rule. You've been warned several times, and I haven't read the whole transcript. For all I know, he did this. And maybe he said...
Well,
he wasn't
the presiding officer, I don't think.
No,
yeah.
he was the protester. Right. He's yeah. the one who invoked the rule.
So and was there like four people in the room when
yeah.
it happened?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's the other thing is, she's just making a record. Now, I remember, and I'm sure you guys don't, when Al Franken shut down Joe Lieberman in the same way. When Franken was the president of the
right.
Senate at the pro temp just at the moment, and Lieberman, and they're both members of the same party, and Lieberman and Lieberman much more centrist, and Franken much more
centrist.
He shut him down, and John McCain had to come to, Lieberman asked for additional time, which is always granted, and Franken said no, and Lieberman looked kind of, didn't know what to do, and John McCain, of all people, stood up, a Republican, but who's very into the whole collegiality and the whole idea, and he said, I just don't understand what's
and
going on in the Senate.
And recognizing Lieberman, a real Republican. There's nothing, I admire, as I say, people who know the rules and know how to use them to their advantage. If you get elected to the House, just memorize Robert's Rules of Order. That would be very good in the rules of the Senate. But I am surprised, again, that he picked Coretta Scott King at that moment. That is, that was, the, especially when you're talking about voter suppression. Come on. No, well, symbolism here. I think it was an appeal to the Trump base.
Yeah, I think I think that's going way too far. I think that I think that that just happened to be the second or third or however many warning. I know that you guys think that you cannot vote for Trump without being a racist, but there you go.
You can't. You may not be a racist yourself, but you have voted to say that racism expressly designed and gloried in does not matter to you.
Okay, let's put that aside for a second, and because meaning that that's too broad a statement for me personally, but what about Jeff Sessions? Let's just take Jeff Sessions and say, can you vote on Jeff Sessions
on the merits
of Jeff Sessions and not be a racist?
I don't know what I think the answer is yes. That you can vote for him and not be a racist. I think you guys have such a pliable definition of racism. It seems to be anything that happens to be against the progressive agenda at any given time.
The hood helps.
but then vote no. Yeah,
you know, okay.
No, let's hear Rich out.
I think you could vote no. I would judge by the deeds, you know, and if you want to vote no, then vote no. That's what they should do.
But let's talk about the politics for a moment. This, of course, is immensely helpful to Elizabeth Warren with her core constituency, maybe or maybe not going into a primary eventually 2020, and really maintaining her mantle as the leader of the progressive part of the Senate. I don't think she loses at all as a result of this. I think she's a big winner.
Well, I'd argue that she's playing to her base as much as, you know, Rosemary says McConnell is playing to his.
You may be right.
She was interviewed last night and asked specifically, did you plan this? And she said, no, she had no idea. That rule is so rarely invoked. She had no idea.
Because she's so well known for telling
out
the truth. So that,
that's cynical.
That's right. Right. That's right.
That's kind of, you know,
she's
that's kind
of
under the cover. You know, cynicism.
All right, let's go to a few letters.
All right.
And we'll use that as
our
palate cleanser, if you will.
Mike says, Elizabeth Warren, had Senator Sessions be just the nominee and not a senator, would Senator Warren have been allowed to continue reading the King letter? How do you distinguish between a senator who is a candidate and the senator? And that's a good point.
See, I think that's the best point. And that's the point I would have made is that if you're going to make yourself a nominee and he didn't have to be the nominee, right? I think that you lose whatever rights you have as a senator once you become a nominee, I think.
I think you're right.
And if you're going to continue, that to me is the single best argument.
Yeah.
Is to say, I'm not impugning a fellow senator because he's in his position as nominee.
And he had just voted, though. I mean, it was important for the Republicans to treat him like a senator.
Right.
He had just voted. I mean, under the rules of McConnell, they should have left it up to the people who was going to be Secretary of Education, not up to Jeff Sessions.
Yeah. And I think somebody should. I mean, I would like. Look, I think she got all the play out of it that she needed. But I think somebody could have stood up if you were making a legal argument and said, "Yeah, listen, you know, Mitch, is this guy a senator 2 minutes ago, and he's not a senator now, and you know,
and
just let us know at what point he is and is not a senator, so we know what to do."
And what about the First?
So that's a good letter.
What about
I agree.
The First Amendment? Of all places that you want a First Amendment right to speak, it's in the United States Senate, so that's very
true. Yeah, but Rosemary
rules.
And I have been Rosemary and I have been railing. I think on the same side of this is
the bad rule.
They agree to it. It's so circumscribed.
The senators agree to the rules.
Long time
McConnell
ago.
And Warren as senators ascribe to those rules. So it's yes, you're abridging your First Amendment rights, but you agree to it.
I don't buy that
for the advantage of civility in the august body of government.
Well, anyway, Stacy checks in and she says Rosemary's a big feminist and sees the writer's point. Really sexist, but she's certain it wasn't present here. Really? How so certain?
Really?
How so certain?
I think I already said that.
Okay. And then Rich, following rules is great, but following them doesn't make the actions any less despicable. In other words, immigration ban. John from Troy.
I mean, I have trouble with the whole thing being silenced, but by the same token, in the large scale, it doesn't matter. He's going to be confirmed anyway. Yes?
Yeah, yes. No. But the point is well taken, that they didn't have to do it.
Right.
Since he is going to be confirmed anyway, why did they have to, well, you know, shove it down the throat of these
people?
Is he going
to be confirmed? If DeVos, yeah. If DeVos needed his vote to get to 50-50...
Yeah, but I don't think he has the other senators, right? I mean, I don't think he has any. I don't think he has any Republicans.
She was the closest one so far. Okay. I mean, barring whatever comes out. On the other hand, Coretta Scott King's letter is all over the internet. It's gotten wider circulation than it ever would have by Elizabeth Warren reading it to four people in the Senate.
That's the importance of this. I wrote. I understand that there are rules, and I understand that she was told prior to her beginning to read the letters, so being chastised should not have been a surprise to her. But permitting another senator to read the same letter without charging him, without the same rule, just smells of the behavior of a sexist, an act of a bully, and a shameful. Where do you learn to deny in one breath and then request in the next? Hypocrites and liars. And that's from L. Paul. I'm sorry, not I. Paul.
I didn't know that someone else read it later.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with that either.
They read it into the record.
We're all looking around saying we didn't know that. So if that's true, I can't speak to that. But if it's true, I think that might change some of the analysis. But Rosemary's point is still well taken. I think this is going to be the way it is. I think people are going to be pushing.
All right, we're going to take a break. We'll be right back and continue our conversation. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC. Good morning. Welcome back to The Roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Very nice to have you with us. We have Alan Chartok here, Rosemary Armeo, and Rich Honan, and we have your letters as well. Panel at WAMC.org. Just a little reminder that if you write to any other email other than panel at WAMC.org, we don't get it, A, and B, we don't have the opportunity to read it. So we've had people say, you never read my letter, and then I realized that, no, the reason was because you've been sending them to the wrong address. So panel at WAMC.org is where you send the letters, and that is how we get them. So keep that in mind. Also, we will just do our normal shtick of reminding you to keep them short because we want to get to as many as we possibly can. With that said, let us talk about, we were talking about the Jeff Sessions hearing. Let's talk about Betsy DeVos, who was confirmed yesterday. It was a historic tiebreaker from the Vice President of the United States, Mike Pence, who cast the deciding vote, and Betsy DeVos confirmed as Education Secretary. This after great debate over her fitness for the job. Rosemary?
She is completely unqualified and then came to her hearing and was unprepared. So those two things together just appalled many people. However, her and her family have contributed millions of dollars to the Republican Party, including to many of the senators who voted for her, which feels like a conflict of interest, but that is American politics today. I think she was the one that a brave Republican would have stood up and said, no, look, let's get somebody better. And even if her goal is to strip the education department, you could have gotten someone in there who doesn't make such a mockery of the system as she does. However, it was foregone to me that she was going to get it.
You said from the very beginning.
From the very beginning, I knew that she was going to get it. And so now, if I were the Democrats, I'd be looking at what the education department does, and do you even need it? We've only had it since the Carter administration. So while I dislike her intently, I think she, you know, it also as a feminist that one of the most prominent women and one of the few in the cabinet, and she's completely incompetent, as if there are no good women educators out there he might have picked.
Chuck Schumer calls her uniquely unqualified.
Yeah, that's bad. But so then is our president. So what's the difference? But do we need it, and how do you limit the damage that she might do in an education department?
Rich.
Well, I think, you know, I'm not saying I'm sold on her either, but I think I agree even more with Rosemary's, you know, final point, which is, why do we have a federal Department of Education again? You know, I understand the fiscal part of it, in that if you're trying to kind of reallocate tax dollars,
she can do that.
Right, but I don't I continue to not understand why that's not something done, you know, state by state. So if you know, if you reduce at some level, if you reduce the federal tax burden by whatever percent is equal to what's going to education, do you know what I mean?
Yes.
And redirect that to the state. And I think at a macro level, she probably agrees with that. I agree with you that it's hard to tell from her record what exactly she's going to do. But I put education there with HUD. I'm not sure why we're doing this.
I mean, I take hope in the fact that I think she can be combated at the state level. You'll find states fighting her fiercely and having standing in court, I think, to stop anything that she does that they don't like.
But what would they find? I think she wants to give more power back to the states. And I think she wants to decentralize.
I think she wants to take money away from public schools and put them into private and specialized schools, but we'll see. It makes me more worried
that
you're putting Rick Perry, another total incompetent, into the Energy Department where he has control over the nuclear arsenal. Now, that could be some damage.
I was watching Alan waiting for the biscotti and coffee to kick in, but I thought the moment was passed and you were ready to go.
It did. It was look, if you have a progressive person as in the Department of Education or in any one of the other places, you really do need to take places like Louisiana and others and say, okay, let's make sure everybody gets a fair break. But if you get a regressive person, well then I think you got real problems, and that's what we have right now.
But isn't that up to Louisiana? For example, isn't that up to Louisiana to say? And maybe there are, and maybe it's not a great example because they've had
where every school
they've
is
had,
a charter
floods
school.
And things like that. But isn't that up to the state to say this is where we choose to allocate our money? Now I can see the state saying almost making like a block grant thing, saying, give
Rich,
us the money and let us do with it as we will.
But, Rich, what if that same state, which you are so concerned about, says, let's not let black people vote here?
About education. What
that,
if they say we're going to teach creationism here and not evolution?
You know, in other words, is there some call for the federal government, pardon me, it's still going down, to standardize?
I don't think so. I personally don't think there should be a call for. I think if you're talking, you guys are talking things like civil rights. I think civil rights are that is something that needs to be enforced both at the state and lacking that at the federal level. And so I separate that from education. If you're telling me there's a state education policy that in its execution is discriminatory, then yes, of course the feds have to step in. But I think at the moment we're just talking operationally, and you know both of you teach at the college level. I'm sure that I won't put words in your mouth, but I'm sure that you're not always thrilled with with the preparedness of some of the college students that you see. And this is from a fairly high spending state.
And Betsy DeVos is going to fix that?
I don't know. I told you, I don't know that necessarily reallocating those funds to charter schools or private schools is the answer. I can understand that being some fairly small part of the answer. I understand that, but I don't think that's the panacea.
I think that we would be more comforted by the experiments that she sort of espouses if she had any experience, appreciation of, time in, appreciate openness to public schools, and she doesn't. The teachers' unions universally are against her.
Yeah.
That's a bad start.
Does that cut for you? I can't tell you that I'm terribly sympathetic if the teachers' unions are going to be against somebody who seeks to measure their results and their merit. I don't know.
It's been my experience that you can have lousy building, lousy curriculum, no supplies, the worst of conditions. And if you have a good teacher, you have a good education. And we don't recognize that very much in this country.
And we should. But I think that's a problem both at the state and the Fed. I don't know how the feds fix that. I agree with you. I think the big problem is that the teachers, most of whom are really good, are not allowed to really go out there and teach.
Well, yes, but let me just say in your attack, your blatant attack on the teachers' unions, teachers are paid now at a decent level, which didn't occur before the teachers' union was really stepped in to help them. And we've heard all of the garbage.
What year are you talking about, Alan? What year was it the teachers were not getting paid at a decent level?
For years and years. And in my mind,
my son is a teacher right now, not in this state, but I would not say he earns a great wage, and there's no job security, and we don't have respect for teachers. And Betsy DeVos is a champion of private schools, which don't have as good teachers and doesn't have the kind of evaluation of teachers that the public schools do.
I have a ton of respect for the public school teachers.
It isn't showing right now.
To the point, no, but listen, there's a big difference between the union that and the teachers, right? And I'll say that in any unionized profession, okay? I could have a ton of respect for the police and not like their union. I could have a ton of respect for the firefighters or the nurses and not like their union. I still don't understand why we even have unions at the public employee level.
Somebody needs
to explain that to me.
You think Andrew Cuomo or Mayor de Blasio or anybody else would settle the way that they are settling with these groups and pay what they're paying if there wasn't a union? You really think that?
Maybe not.
I think this is the Scott Walker-led right attack on unions. And they have certainly made many mistakes. I've been a union member for a long time, and I have lots of complaints about them. However, it's unions who have protected hours, who have gotten working conditions changed, who have led to, especially, let's look at pensions. It's unions who have held on to actual pensions. Well, the rest of us have fallen for the Wall Street crap that a 501s,
right,
whatever those 401k, funds are, 401k
right,
things are good, and they are not. So and the unions now are getting attacked because we're bankrupting the system.
But those pensions are in fact bankrupting the system. There's not a fully funded public pension in America. There is not there is not a single fully funded public pension system in America. That alone is killing municipalities. That's why your school
because
taxes
the
are going.
Municipalities are bad negotiators
because they didn't do what they should have done.
Right.
No, and you know why it is. It's because it's for two things. It's because, and I'm not going to get into the arcane thing of defined benefit pension plans, but we all know how those work. And right?
Well, please do. It sounds sexy.
Okay. Well, we all know that what happens is you get paid some percentage of your last however many years, and we all know what happens in those last 3 years that you work, and everybody knows this, and it's the people next door. And they're not doing anything terrible, but
they're playing by the rules.
Well, you know,
the municipalities badly negotiate, but the unions were right in protecting their people. Have a pension is better than to have a 401.
That was their job, and I agree with you. 401ks have probably not been what they were sold to do. But I will tell you this:
remember that when we voucherized Medicare.
Yeah, but Rosemary, right now, if you had the Social Security that you're paying 6% into, and your employer is paying 7% into, imagine if you had that 13-14% that was going into your 401k every year, in addition to the 6 or 8% that's going into your 401k, and you didn't have that on you. The biggest unfunded defined benefit pension plan in the world is Social Security.
Come on, Rich.
None of which, by the way, has anything to do with the ability to teach kids in a classroom. Okay, you're talking about operational things.
No, it does, Rich. It does. If you just give me a second here,
go ahead.
It does allow us see. My feeling, when Rosemary spoke about her son, I get that. To me, who's more important, a doctor or a teacher? A great teacher. How do you get great teachers? You pay them. You pay them just the same way you pay anybody else. So you make a lot of money, but we have somebody who's in charge of our children in their classes, and they should start at $100,000, in my opinion.
I agree.
Start there.
And
my son waits tables.
And doesn't it?
Ends meet.
And I know this is not the subject, but this is what we got. So doesn't that tell you something about unions if society is paying somebody, like a corporate lawyer, several times what we're paying a teacher or a firefighter or a nurse or a police officer? Does that make sense to anybody? Who's bringing more to society? And why is it that the non-unionized person is the one who's making five times what these people are making? If the unions were doing what Rosemary said they would be, teachers would be making $100,000 a year, which is what they deserve.
Is this perhaps like Obamacare? You want to do away with unions and they would be replaced by what that would protect workers?
I would do a replace. Okay, first of all, what protects workers right now is
I don't want to stop the debate because I love this conversation. Okay. It's going really great. Just know that I have to take a break soon. So
okay.
Do you want me to take it now or do you
take it now?
Take it now.
Okay, because I don't want to stop the momentum.
Oh, good. You did, though, so it's great.
Just a little bit.
Take it
all right.
Take it.
Let's take a break. We'll be right back.
Support for WAMC comes from Pelham Auto Service at the Amherst Belchertown line, located by the sign of the Flying Pig, a worker-owned and operated service repairing foreign cars since 1972. PelhamAuto.com. And Adams Ferriker Farms, Poughkeepsie, Kingston, Newburgh, and Wappinger. Fresh seafood, Hereford beef, farm fresh produce, local and imported cheeses, specialty groceries, AdamsFarms.com.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. I think we've hosed everybody off. They're ready to go again. Here we go. We do have letters. Let's catch up on the letters, and then we'll move on to some other topics.
As a survivor of sexual assault, says Julie, Sessions' inability to know the definition of sexual assault in the fall of 2016, ! is what elicits my fury. I was even more capitalized, furious, when he sheepishly knew the definition under oath as the AG nominee. The bigotry also elicits my fury, but I have a couple of dogs in this fight. And then there's some stuff that I don't think I'm going to read on the radio. Okay.
All right.
Good morning, panel, says Jackie, and congrats on a great job with the fund drive. I'm seeing a lot on social media, people giving accolades to Murkowski and Collins for having the strength to go against their party in the Senate DeVos debate. But I don't think many people know or heard their approval vote at the hearing for the nominee. They expressed concerns from their constituents, but allowed her to pass through anyway. If they knew they were going to vote against her in the Senate vote, they shouldn't have allowed her to pass the first round. I feel shame on them. I don't know. I thought it took some real courage to do what they did.
Did it? They could go against the party, but the party gets what it wants anyway. Isn't that kind of limited damage?
That's right, Rosemary. And the question then is that was there fix in?
In other words, why
couldn't they get the third?
Yeah.
You mean there wasn't one other person among that?
Three other people who profess themselves, three Republicans who profess themselves on the fence, but they all voted for
I've seen
for
it
her.
In the state legislature 100 times. There are 2 terms that come to mind. One of them is somebody goes to the speaker and says, Speaker, I got my people are killing me on this. And they say, your people don't know. The speaker says, your people don't know who you are. You're in the tank. But then somebody comes from a really marginal district and says, please, please let me go on this one. And they say, okay, you're off the hook. So the 2 terms are in the tank or off the hook.
I'm not sure that either one of these women fit that.
No. The question is, how about the other people who were told, no, we need you on this one? Okay, so Carol says, a question for Rosemary from one feminist to another. If the Education Department disappears, so does Title IX and all that embraces.
I don't think you need the Education Department to enforce Title IX. Is that true?
I agree.
You don't. It would still be federal law.
EJ says, one of the civil rights policies the Department of Ed is responsible for enforcing equal access for students with disabilities. Often in a move to privatization, those students who require additional services are not treated fairly. DeVos is a known detractor from making sure our more vulnerable students are treated with fairness. And they're not the only ones. I mean, you have a president of the United States who made fun of somebody with a disability. Remember that?
Yes, I do remember that. Well, she also has little experience with students who are emotionally troubled and disruptive, the whole alternative education. She's not dealt with that at all because private schools and special schools simply expel those people.
And I'm sorry, Rosemary Ann Ryan makes the same point. The Department of Education uses federal funds to make sure the federal laws, Title IX, Title VI, IDEA, et cetera, is enforced on all levels of education. It's extraordinarily important for ensuring equal access to public K through 12 education and for all post-secondary education. Theoretically, the AG could enforce these laws. However, Sessions has made it clear he's not interested in aggressive pursuits of these kinds of laws. All right, and then the last one I have in front of me right now is Teresa asked Rich. No, Teresa's not here today. Rosemary's here, right?
Yep, Rosemary.
You're Rosemary. You're not Teresa,
Rosemary.
Are you?
Audio name tags.
Yeah. Okay, let's just change that. Rosemary asked Rich, oh, no, no. Nope, I got this all wrong. Teresa asked Rich when he was on the panel after the election if there was anything he was worried about. I remember he said he wasn't worried. Now that Trump is the president, and with the actions that have occurred during the first almost 3 weeks, I wonder if he has any concerns. If so, I'd be interested to hear what they are. Thank you, Patricia from Granville.
I'm trying to remember that colloquy, but I think what I said was if I wasn't worried, it was because I knew there was going to be going on what is going on, which is organized resistance, more transparency, more investigative work by the press. So I think that I'm not saying I agree with everything that he's done in this fairly short span, but I was less concerned because I knew there was going to be a groundswell of opposition, which I think has happened. I think that's kind of the way it's supposed to work. So I'm not concerned.
All right. I want to move on to another topic, and obviously it's the big one, and that is the immigration ban. Last night there was a hearing, the appeals court panel heard the arguments, and a Justice Department lawyer on Tuesday said courts should not second-guess President Trump's targeted travel ban, drawing skepticism from a three-judge federal appeals panel weighing the limits of executive authority in cases of national security. But the Justice Department's lawyer sensed he was not gaining ground in that line of argument. I'm not sure I'm convincing the court, he said. It was a lively but technical hearing on an issue that has gripped much of the country's attention. We are expecting a decision from the appeals court at the earliest today, and if not, by the end of the week.
But you never know during these arguments what's really going to happen. We've seen examples of this before, but it is ominous for the Trump administration.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like the oral argument went terribly well for the Trump administration. It's really easy to second guess when somebody is asked a question by a panel of judges. You know, and I have second guessed and I have been second guessed, and especially when it's a hot court like the Ninth Circuit, meaning they ask a lot of cold court is one just lets you talk
present.
And you know the Ninth Circuit, much like the Second Circuit, who I've been in front of, will pepper you with a lot of questions. So you could always second guess. There was one part of the discussion that made me cringe when I think the question was asked, you know, are there things the president can do that are unreviewable, basically?
Yeah, that was an interesting question.
Right. And to me, just as a lawyer, I have a hard time ever telling, we were talking about this off air, I have a hard time ever telling a court, you don't have the authority to look at this. I think, first of all, I often think that's not correct. I think the question is usually, you do have the authority, but you have to apply a very, very high standard, a high burden here, which I think I probably would have gone with as opposed to him. It sounded like he kind of said, yeah, the president, there's times when the president does
outrank you.
Yeah, right, which may be true. I don't think that bodes well.
I listened to the whole, it was an audio file of it. I found it fascinating, but also mystifying. At one point, I was saying, oh, wow, the government's really getting it. And then soon after, it's like, oh, man, the state's really getting it. You know, they asked hard questions of everyone. And I think it came down to one judge seemed in favor of the state, the other seemed in favor of the federal government, and the other one was kind of the older guy, was just much harder to read.
Who's Walter Mondale's brother-in-law?
Really?
Yes.
That's fascinating.
Didn't know that, but there you go.
At any rate, the whole thing seems sort of like a passing step to me. It's going to the Supreme Court. So almost at some level, no matter who wins or loses here, it doesn't matter.
So, Rich, explain what en banc means.
En banc means the entire. So you could have a panel of. So the Second Circuit consists of a. Or I'm sorry, the Ninth Circuit. All the circuits consist of a lot of judges, and many, and you are. Often you're talking to a panel, a three or five, you know, a three
randomly
judge panel.
Selected.
Yeah. En banc means you're going to talk to all of them.
You want to. So if you lose, you can say, hey, I want the whole court.
Yeah, I think there's depending on the procedural posture, and because this was a temporary restraining order, there's an argument as to whether this was actually an interim step. There's not really supposed to be interlocutory appeals, meaning
right.
interim appeals
right.
in federal court. But it was treated like a preliminary injunction. So there's times when, as of right, you can ask to go to the entire court. There's times when you have to ask permission. And, of course, with the Supreme Court, often you have to ask permission, certiorari, to go to the Supreme Court. In cases like this, it might be that they might have a right because of the subject matter and because of the procedural posture of the case.
We have to take a break, but let me ask the question, and then I'll pause you, and we'll take a break, okay. And then we'll come back for the answer. But I was really curious because there seemed to be this discussion, and I was following it with the New York Times, who had legal analysts looking at it as it was going on. And one of the things that came up is that what?
No, it's just amazing, the real time aspect. You know,
you're
making an argument, and the country is listening to you real time, and people are criticizing you.
Well, it wasn't criticizing.
It was sort of critiquing.
Yeah, well, analysis.
It's kind of cool.
And
actually.
Trying to figure out what they were saying, because it was legal speak, and I don't speak that language. But the thing I thought was interesting is that that this idea of bringing a case on behalf of a state versus bringing it on behalf of a person who was directly impacted, that is a difficult case to make. And I would like to address that when we come back.
Which is why the Supreme Court should be real time and we should hear it because it's so important.
Very good point as well. Let's take a break. Ray is ready to do the news, and we'll be back right after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable panel. Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, and the ever-dancing Rich Honan. We welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. When last we met, we were talking about the hearing that took place with the Ninth Circuit Court. I asked the question about a case that is filed on behalf of the state of Washington versus a case that is filed on behalf of someone who feels that their rights have been violated as a result of the ban, and the difference in that we'll first look at the impact that it would have on this court, but then, as Rosemary so rightly points out, the fact that this will eventually be going to the Supreme Court and what effect that has.
Yeah, so the question is, who has standing to bring this?
Standing. Yes.
Standing is the question. Standing is the ability to bring a case. And whether it is you individually, because you are the person harmed, or whether the attorney general on behalf of the residents of the state can bring it. And one of the and these are all kind of procedural questions that you have to deal with before you get to the substantive issues. And one of the arguments made by the government in its brief was the attorneys general did not have standing because if somebody was going to bring this case, it would have to be one of the people who, you know, was denied entry or something. Then they went on to make the point, and there appears to be Supreme Court some Supreme Court precedent to that effect. The government then went on to say that in this case, the people themselves, the individuals who are actually affected, only would have had very limited appeal rights. That they themselves might not even have had full standing to protest the ban. So how then could somebody do it on their behalf? I don't know. You know, standing and procedural issues are always really good ways of courts to punt you know, to punt away from the issues. So we'll
right.
see. So
and
I don't
can
know
do whatever
they,
they want, right?
Yeah.
I mean, in that regard.
Remember, the most famous, probably the most famous, you know, Marbury v. Madison, yeah, Mar- right. it, you know, is you know, 1804, the, you know, is the most, you know, probably the most famous and you know, of
he
all the constitutional
right,
decisions.
Right to his appointment, but you've come to the wrong place.
Right, exactly. The bottom line, that whole decision is summed up in, you know, you we have no jurisdiction here. There's no standard.
Mm-hmm.
You know. But
the fascinating thing about this case to me is that we laymen think, oh, it's a legal matter. They'll solve it. And yet every night I watch legal experts, incredible scholars, known, you know, students of the law who disagree vehemently, and they both make good points. I mean, I could understand the reasoning on both sides. So it really does just get down to almost a subjective decision. So
regardless, I think that's what it's going to be. That's what it's going
to
be.
And regardless of the debate, if I'm listening to Jeffrey Toobin or Alan Dershowitz, who should I believe more?
Oh, that's a good question, actually.
Rich, I'm asking Rich as a lawyer. Like, who would you trust more and to get advice from? If you had to go to one of them, who would you go to?
On constitutional matters?
Yeah.
On constant, you know, Dershowitz. I don't love Dershowitz, but he knows the Constitution pretty well.
How about Lawrence Tribe?
Yeah, Tribe. Now I have a personal problem with Tribe because I had to read his treatise in my constitutional law class.
Well, I'm glad you're not bitter.
Yeah. I think when you reach that level of constitutional analysis, it comes down to what Rosemary
right.
said before.
Subjective.
It's subjective.
Well, and that's what
if
that's
you
the
think
thing,
it's
you
ultimately
totally
the right
is.
Thing, it's kind of like, and now everybody's really going to jump on me, you know how people will quote the Bible for, you know,
for
both sides
side.
Of
yeah.
well,
many
sure.
debates.
Yeah. No, that's
yeah. it's the same thing in the law.
Absolutely. And because Rosemary's point was that, because I was watching the coverage last night and I listened to Dershowitz, I'm like, well, okay, that makes perfect
yeah,
that, sense.
And then, another,
and then
next
two
next
seconds time. Later, you yep. have Jeffrey Toobin, and I'm like, well, that makes perfect sense too.
And to me, I contrast it with Trump saying, oh, these so-called judges, it's outrageous what they're doing. No, it really isn't. They have you know, backing
and
so substantial
how much
evidence.
And so how much does it count that they were appointed by one president or another, in one party
oh, that's
or
a good
another.
Question too.
And you know very well that it counts a lot.
Yeah, I would think it does. I mean, because and I don't even think necessarily in an evil way. I think, you know, when you approach the law at that level, you have a philosophical mindset, and right. at the end of the day, the law is supposed to do the right thing. Right.
Well,
right? So you're supposed to be able to read the law and the Constitution in a way. It doesn't always come up with a perfect result, but you could at least say, you know, equity was done.
Well,
right.
you know, we supposedly have this thing called the law. Which we all know a lot about.
So-called law.
The so-called law. The
we
so-called
all know this
judges.
Thing called the law. And yet, and we have two houses of Congress. And my question to you guys is the judiciary the interpreter of the law and the enforcer of the law, or are they the third legislative branch?
Oh.
And I think you can make an argument that they are the third legislative branch.
Well, we just adverted to you know, John Marshall in Marbury v. Madison, where he comes out with the famous line, is it emphatically the law and province of the judiciary to say what the law is?
Yeah, but that doesn't mean we understand what the judiciary is. Is the judiciary a house of ill repute, in other words? or is the judiciary somebody, you know, you just mentioned the Bible and quoting it on either side. Yes, that's true, and it's done all the time. Slave owners, not slave owners. However, I worry that, or I think everybody should be worried, that the Bible is about God. And God may be sitting up there and saying, this one's right and this one's wrong. Don't you see?
Yeah.
You think I'm crazy, don't you?
But no, I'm following.
Rosemary is not.
I'm not following.
Rosemary's voting
in. Crazy. you need more sleep after the drive.
It's why I wore my Fire Island sweatshirt today.
Here's my question for the lawyer. Do judges, how much do they listen when they are insulted by one member of the two parties who are in front of them? So when Trump is saying so-called judge, or before in Curiel when he was calling him, you know, the Mexican who couldn't decide fairly, does that have an effect?
Well,
it doesn't seem smart.
Well, it doesn't, but if you go back to the Obamacare decision where Obama called out, you know, in an unprecedented way, called out the Supreme Court and said, frankly, I don't think it's even close. I don't know why they even granted it, you know, basically why they even granted cert. He said, I don't even know why they were looking at it. It's not even close.
But that's different than a personal attack on an individual judge.
That's not saying Roberts is an idiot.
Okay, so Rosemary wants to know whether it was smart on Trump's part.
Probably was. I'm not saying it was wise.
I just want to say one thing. Politically, politically, it was smart.
Maybe.
It catered to his base. It was more red meat. It's exactly what he's been known to do all along. Was it right? Was it good? Was it healthy? No. But was it politically adept? Probably.
Yeah, and normally, you know, you try not to annoy the judge. You know, the lawyers are always trying to tell their clients, you know, let's try not to annoy the judge. And sometimes I have to tell some of my associates that. Obama, I think, called out the court on the Obamacare decision. And not only did they,
but
did,
it's
did
the
Robert
court,
Holton,
it's not an individual thing.
I don't know. I remember Obama also during the.
I mean, you can
during,
call it the Senate. It's not personal.
During
that
State
point.
Of the Union address, when they focused in on Roberts and he actually met. Out, that's not true. When Obama was talking about the Citizens United decision,
that's
he said it during,
Roberts dissing the president.
That was Roberts. That was Roberts. You know, they were focused on him as
but not from
as,
the bench.
But I'm saying my point is, I think that judges work really, really, really. I really think this is true. I think they work really hard to put aside. I don't like this guy. You know, I don't agree with this guy. I think they, you know, this guy's a jerk. I you know, why are we even here? You know, I really think judges work really, really hard
that's
to do that.
That's a smart thing for a lawyer who goes in front of judges.
I was
going to
say, are you becoming a lapdog?
Listen, I'm not. Listen, if I end up in front of a judge, it means something's going really, really wrong.
So let me ask you a follow-up question in regard specifically to this case.
Yes.
Which the other part of this hearing that I thought was fascinating was the judges asking and discussing, should we take into account what Trump has tweeted? And is that something, does that come into our interpretation? Because you are saying this in the law, but that isn't what the guy who presented it is saying. You are saying, because the federal government was saying, the Justice Department making the case that the president has this right, the president has this right, the president has this right, and then the question coming, okay, but then as far as that, when we go into actually looking into it, does what the president say about it and what his intent, does that play a part?
And specifically to put a face on it.
Right. Absolutely.
Giuliani.
They did bring up Giuliani.
Me that question, if I was representing the government and they asked me that question, I would say, Judge, you have to look no further than the Supreme Court's decision on the Affordable Care Act when the president publicly said again and again and again, this is not a tax, this is not a tax, this is not a tax. And John Roberts said, yeah, it's a tax. And therefore, we uphold the entire legislation. So the answer is no, there is precedent for ignoring what is and what is not in the four corners of the record.
But what
you have
I found,
a record on appeal, and that's what you are confined to.
But
what that's
what
I would say.
Okay, but they didn't say that. they actually.
It was about
sort
the
of,
Muslims.
They also, I mean, they basically said, okay, he says a lot of things, but I think you have to take it in the context of what's in front of
listen,
you.
Listen, it's amazingly easy to second guess people at you know, when they're having their argument. And again, you know,
I don't mean to second guess. I mean to ask the question because I find it interesting of when you have someone who is so vocal.
Joe, it's like everything else. If the president had said something that helped my case, I would have.
Wait. Glenn wrote in and wanted to correct the record. It says it was Alito who mouthed, "That's not true." At the Soju.
Was it Alito?
Yes.
Okay. All right.
Well, I just would like to point out that corrected. President Obama, looking about 10 years younger, is kite surfing with this with his billionaire in the Virgin Islands, and you can insult him all you want. He doesn't care.
I'm not insulting him.
And Trump used to have that life, and he gave it up.
I'm not insulting him. I'm.
Wait, you think Trump?
Wait. There you go.
You think Trump could kite surf?
No, but he used to be down. You know,
not 240 pounds. No.
Is that what he's up to?
You think he could kite surf?
I didn't mean that
he's worse than Ted Cruz.
You said he used to have that
life. Salty treats in the White House.
I'm talking about a 70-year-old billionaire who could do whatever he wanted to do. He could go to Mar-a-Lago whenever he wanted to go. He had a life, right?
Mm-hmm.
And now that is not. Now they just they
Now he's wandering around the White House.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Like Winston Churchill visiting FDR.
Or like that. Right. Oh, remember the mafia guy? The mafia guy who used to pretend he was insane and walk around Gallo or whatever.
Gotti.
It wasn't Gotti. It was the other guy.
Was it
Gallo or something like that?
A listener will call him
Crazy Joe.
Okay. Do Gallo. We letter? Letter? Letter?
Oh
letter.
Boy, we have letters.
Okay, go.
Oh,
let's
can the U.S. Attorney General be impeached if his or her behavior is too egregious? Or is it only the president who can be impeached? Just
they can
curious.
Be fired, right? But
well,
not impeached.
I thought, because you impeach judges. Remember, Alcee Hastings was impeached. I think you have to be impeached to be taken out of the position, and then criminal proceedings can be brought.
But don't
against
you have to be elected to be impeached? We don't elect these guys; they get hired.
Oh, you're asking specifically
the
attorney general?
We're asking the lawyer on the panel.
Yeah, I don't know if you have to first impeach the attorney general before you bring criminal proceedings against
them. Oh, no, I don't think that's
them.
What they were asking. I just wanted to know if he could be impeached.
I don't know.
Okay.
You know, for a holiday present, I got Google Home, which is this old device that you put in your house and you can just like ask it. It's sort of like Siri, but you can ask it questions.
Yeah.
So you say, hey, Google, what's the weather going to be today? And you can say, hey, Google, can you impeach the attorney general? And it'll tell you right there. I feel like we ought to have that on the show.
So
just
it,
so
does,
we can
it
Google
doesn't
it.
Bother,
consider
it
done.
It doesn't bother you having that in your house.
It's
so that hears everything that goes on in your house.
Yeah, it bothers like my it bothers my wife to the nth degree.
Oh
she
my God.
She
I don't want
she
it in my
really
house.
Bothers her. I say that my standing is that we are so boring that there is nothing other than, you know, like
you are
what
never
we,
in your no, house.
Well, that's that is another point.
I would not. I don't know.
But
I
think
would not
it would be
want
great
that.
To
not
have
that
one.
Any, nothing of excitement ever goes on in my house.
I think
house,
it would be great to have one here just to say, "Hey, Google, can you?" But I can do it here on the.
Okay. Dear panel, I continue to hear Conway and others complain that the Democrat language is read Trump in the office of the president is not respectful enough. Does she fail to recall the Republican shouted, you lie at Obama, calling him a Kenyan Muslim, blocked his nominees and questioned his patriotism regularly? Or does she not bother to consider that Trump calling people clowns, so-called terrible losers, but also solicit disrespect? Anthony in Kingston.
He's kite surfing. He doesn't care. Yeah.
At the federal level, Article 2 of the U.S. Constitution states in Section 4 that the president, vice president, and all civil officers of the United States shall be removed from office on impeachment for and conviction
Whoa.
Of treason, bribery, or other high crimes and misdemeanors.
Yeah. There you go.
I keep trying.
High crimes
such,
and misdemeanors.
Yeah, I keep trying, says Joel, to listen to Rich openly, but it's not working today.
I thought he was especially informative and interesting today.
I like this show.
No, go ahead, Joel. Take your shot.
You should have talked to my late father and mother about pensions. 401ks do not work. My mother's teacher retirement allowed her a small pension and helped her to live securely in old age, as did my father's. You pay them at least a living wage, and they continue to teach, partly because they know they have a retirement which rewards them for the years of teaching. Okay, so there's that. And then the point is that the unions did that. And Scott says, since Rich thinks your definition of racism is so broad and seems to find a few things racist, could Rich please provide his definition of racism for us?
My definition of racism is thinking something negative about somebody because of either the way they look or because of the amount of money they have or because of their color and treating them in a negative way because of that.
Okay.
Jive with what we think.
Huh?
I'm not sure that that's much different than what we think.
No, maybe not. They ask, he gets.
But I will say that simply voting not for Hillary Clinton, I'm sorry, I don't think that makes you a racist.
Okay, dear panel, in light of the fact that
we've
Ms.
run out of time,
DeVos,
we'll
yeah,
take
I know,
this up
I know,
again.
I know. This is coming from the guy who's the Nazi and the Ku Klux Klan and the and all the other things.
In light of the fact that Ms. DeVos had an ill-conceived notion of what IDEA and ADA do, would you consider discussing the Trump administration's threat to OPWDD waiver service in Medicaid and the threat to SSI for disabled children?
Okay,
I have to go do like four hours of homework on that one.
Rich, you're the lawyer. Can you figure out what the hell she's talking about?
Is she worried about med? I think she's worried about it. Let me read it.
Okay, go ahead.
While you're reading, I'll read another one. Everett says, if even an extremely unqualified, even a harmful nominee can't be stopped, God save us. I know it's Pollyannic, but the best we could hope for is that Betsy DeVos will be pulled out of her insular world of select students and for-profit education. She may have her eyes open.
Maybe.
anything's possible. Okay.
Yeah, at that level, you really should have on-the-job training, right?
Well,
I think Rosemary, at that level, everybody has on-the-job training because you couldn't have had a job
before.
True.
I mean, yeah, but
a learning curve is different than on-the-job training. She is starting at zero.
Oh, as you know, says Joseph, Betsy DeVos is in. Did you know that Eric Prince, founder of the Blackwater Security, is our brother?
Yes.
And they're both friends and fans of Mr. Bannon? Okay.
I just want to, can you repeat what you said yesterday to Rich? I thought it stuck with me yesterday of what you said about the difference between DeVos and Ben Carson.
Yeah.
And the fact that Elizabeth Warren voted for Ben Carson, and the reason is because he was prepared during, he did his homework, and he answered the questions intelligently. Now,
yeah,
I don't like
this man at all, and I don't think he's qualified. I think he got the job because of his attachment with Trump. However, he went into the hearing. He took it very seriously. He had answered pages and pages of questions that came from Democrats, so they were definitely hostile. He answered them fully and seriously, and he won over the ringleaders of the Democratic opposition. That's a lot different than Betsy DeVos, who breezed in, gave such stupid answers she's being parodied on Saturday Night Live, and was as unqualified to begin with.
And
there's
I wanted your comment on that.
But I think Betsy DeVos is a much easier target for Elizabeth Warren and the progressive left because she's a rich white lady who is not gonna have no matter how she does. So I think she's
Ben
an easy
Carson's
target to
a
take
pretty
a work
easy
at.
Target. I think you underestimate that.
Okay.
All right.
One more letter, Alan.
Okay. For Rich, for most of us, this less about ideology and more about qualification. Each teacher in the teachers union has gone through more training and evaluation than Ms. DeVos. I hold a U.S. Coast Guard license issued to me by highly skilled maritime professionals. How would you feel if I was the one issuing and evaluating your answers on the bar exam? Please answer the question and stop talking about pensions.
All right, we have 10 seconds.
I'm not sure I follow the question, but
she's saying she's unqualified and therefore she's scary to be at the top of the heap.
Well, then I understand your point. I don't think she's going to be making the decision as to which teachers are qualified and which aren't.
All right. Rich has put his sport jacket on, which obviously means it's time to go. So he's got one foot out the door. We're going to move on. Alan and Rosemary and Rich, that was great. Thank you very much for the spirited discussion this morning. We'll continue our program after this short break.